Blog Talk Radio.
Haciendo guinea fast lane, yeah. In the fast lane, in the fast lane. Going too fast in the fast lane.
race, was born to race. He had a mean streak 2 feet wide. A son of a gun with a taste for fun and more than his share of pride. Take a dirt road curve with the devil's nerve, make a car dance across the mud. And haul and shine with his regular lines, and the track got in his blood. He was a real hot shot and he bragged a lot, but man, that fool could drive. Cause he loved the feel of the steering wheel and the girls with the bedroom eyes. And in a racing tide or a barroom fight, old Stroker stole the show. A backstretch blazer, a real hellraiser, and a racetrack Romeo.
Mama, lock your daughters up, that foul bunch is back in town. And them little girls get frisky when they hear that race car sound. They're bringing out...
Good evening, Fast Lane Sports Nation. Welcome to another Tuesday edition of the Fast Lane Sports Show, presented by Hardcore Fish and Game. Be sure to go to hardcorefishandgame.com today. Check out all their great fishing, hunting, accessories, and more, all on their website right there. Outdoor performance gear made to last, and you can get custom-made outdoor apparel as well. Sign up today for their... on their website, and you can get 15% off of your first order. So check that out, plus free shipping on all orders over $75. Go to hardcorefishinggame.com today. We've got a great show ahead of us tonight. I will be flying solo for the first hour. We have special guests from Lernerville Speedway. We have Big E. Eric Westendorf will be joining me in the second hour to talk to us about everything going on this season at Lernerville Speedway. Plus, opening night was this past weekend. We'll talk about that, find out who the first winners of the season were there. We've got NASCAR was down south this weekend at Talladega. We'll talk about that. We'll find out who is leading the Fast Lane Sports Show NASCAR Fantasy League. We've got a lot to go over tonight. The High Limits Racing Series is back at it tonight. We will talk about that. They are in Iowa at 34 Raceway. We'll find out how things are going over there as well. So right now, keep it tuned here for the next 2 hours to the Fast Lane Sports Show, only on the Slicks and Sticks Radio Network and live every show from the 357 Woodworks Studios. Let's go!
Live from the 357 Woodworks Studios and only on the Slicks and Sticks Radio Network, this is the Fast Lane Sports Show, presented by Hardcore Fish and Game. And now, your hosts, Pete and Christina. We'll be right back.
Oh, that's right. This is the Fast Lane Sports Show presented by Hardcore Fishing Game, hardcorefishinggame.com for all your fishing and hunting accessories and more. All right there on hardcorefishinggame.com. Thank you for joining us again tonight here on the Slicks and Sticks Radio Network. Yes, I am flying solo. Christina had a few things to do tonight, so she has the night off. We have special guest Eric Westendorf of Lernerville Speedway. He'll be joining me in just a little bit. Big shout out to all of the sponsors of this show. Just want to say, since I've got the whole first hour to myself, I'm going to brag a little bit about some of the companies that are associated with the Fast Lane Sports Show. We appreciate each and everybody who currently is part of the show, and even in the past, we've had some companies come and go that have stuck around for a season or so. But we thank anybody and everybody who's been associated with the show. But right now, obviously, every weekend, we come to you live on the Slicks and Sticks Radio Network. Of course, that wouldn't be possible without my co-host, Christina. It is her network, the Slicks and Sticks, the original racing show, Slicks and Sticks Network. So thank you, and a big shout-out to Christina. Of course, our phone lines, we couldn't have our special guests like Eric, who's on tonight. We had Ryan on last week. We had Tyler Harris from Pittsburgh's Pennsylvania Motor Speedway. He was on a couple weeks ago. Anybody who calls in the show joins us on the Barbasol Shea phone line. So shout out to Barbasol. They've been with us since the very first show. So we obviously appreciate them, and a big shout out to Barbasol for that original sponsors of the show. Be sure to go to Barbasol.com and check out their great line of products. You can get Barbasol products basically wherever groceries or pharmacies, grocery stores, pharmacies, any place really that sells any type of shaving stuff, shaving cream, razors, stuff like that. You can find Barbasol shaving cream, but you can also go online to their website, and they have their own little shave club that you can join and have different shave creams, razors. You can have all of that sent right to your house, right in the mail. That way you don't have to worry about going out and getting it. And you'll never run out, because if you join their club, then you you sign up and they send you stuff every single week. Monthly. It's a monthly shave club that you can join. So that's pretty cool. They just celebrated, it's been a couple years now, but 2019 was their 100th anniversary. Barbasol has been around since 1919. So they are 104 now. They're 104. But if you go to barbasol.com, you can find on their website there their Barbasol Shave Club subscription. Now, you can start off with a starter kit. They'll send that right in the mail right now as soon as you order it. That is $6.99, and it comes with a Ultra 6 Plus razor, an Ultra 6 cartridge. So you get the handle, you get the cartridge, and you get a razor tray to put it in to keep it nice and clean. Now, depending on how often you shave and how many refills you need, you can sign up. They have different, subscriptions for you to sign up with. So you just go to barbasol.com, you click on Join the Shave Club, and it shows you all of the information right there. So it's a pretty neat, pretty cool thing that they have there. Of course, their Barbasol Ultra 6 Plus, that is their latest technology in razors. It's the close shave technology that they have. It's got six ultra-thin blades that deliver a close, comfortable shave. It's the top of the razor features an ultra trimmer. It's a seventh blade that refines and styles tricky areas like under the nose, sideburns, beards, you know, if you want to straighten it up nice and neat. It's got a premium metal handle with a rubber grip for easy control. The head pivots and adjusts for that close shave that you're looking for. The open flow blades allow for easy cleaning, and it extends the blade life, makes it nice and long. And it's got a lubricating strip across the top as well that helps soften your skin as you shave. That is the Barbasol Ultra 6 Plus Razor. Let me tell you, I've used them. They are amazing. They're fantastic. They, you know, no irritation to the skin after you're done shaving. If you want to throw some aftershave on, you don't get that burn. And they're just, they're awesome razors. They are really, really great razors. So be sure to sign up for the Barbasol Shave Club. Why? You ask why. Why would I want to join the Barbasol Shave Club? Well, for many of the reasons that I just said, it depends on how often you shave. You can sign up for different refill subscriptions, but it's just $1.99 per refill cartridge. Shipments are auto-delivered, so you don't have to remember when you go to the grocery store, do I need razors? No, I think I'm good. Then you get home and you're out and you needed them. Auto delivers straight to your door, free shipping, no hidden fees ever. It's always free shipping, and there's no strings attached, no contracts, no limitations. You can cancel any time if you feel like, you know, it's not the razor for you. You can cancel any time, and you can adjust the subscription as it goes to how you need products. But they've got aftershave, they've got shave cream, and the razor. So be sure to go to Barbasol.com and check out their great line of products. So thank you to Barbasol. Big shout out to them. They also send great swag and merchandise every year for us to use in giveaways. We've done that. We had one already this year that we got a good friend of the show won that first one. So congrats to Gary Woods. He won that first big Barbasol prize pack. So we got to get that to him and meet up with him and get him that. But Barbasol sends us great merchandise to use for giveaways. And we'll be putting together another giveaway prize box here very soon. It's going to have – now, I posted a picture on Facebook on the Fastlane Sports Show group page. A few people already saw it. I was already getting text messages about it. But we have some great Fastlane Sports Show merchandise now as well. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Some other sponsors of the show, of course, every week we come to you live from the 357 Woodworks Studios. Scott over at 357 Woodworks, he's been a great friend of mine. I've known him for about 9 years now. And he came on board. Shortly after the show started, he came on board with us to be the studio sponsor, and he has been ever since. But he makes some amazing handcrafted wood products. If you're in the market for something that you need, maybe a gift idea. Maybe you need a gift idea. You got a newlywed, maybe a wedding gift, and you want to get somebody a nice cutting board for their kitchen or a housewarming gift, something like that, or maybe you need an end table or a coffee table or, you know, stuff like that. You've got to check out 357 Woodworks on Facebook, on Instagram, TikTok, anywhere on the internet. Just Google search 357 Woodworks and check out some of the amazing products that Scott has made over there. And it seems like every month, he has something new that he comes up with, a new design of something or a new product. For Easter, he had these rabbits that he made, these bunnies for your porch. Those were pretty awesome. He's got cornhole boards right now. You know, summer's coming up, tailgate parties, backyard barbecue parties. You got all your buddies or family gathering, and you want to play cornhole and you don't, but you don't have no boards, check out 357 Woodworks. He's got awesome hardwood cornhole board sets that come with the bags, even $250 for the whole set. And it's tournament size and everything. So those are really awesome. Plus stuff for the kitchen. Like I said, cutting boards, charcuterie boards, just anything you can think of made from wood, Scott could probably do it. So check him out. We've got a great, awesome clock here at the house. When we first moved in, it was like a housewarming / sponsorship thing that he made us, a nice clock that's got our name on it. And says, when our family was established, 2003 and everything. So that's pretty awesome. Handmade clock like that. Plus he's made our trophies. We've got a bunch of trophies sitting here for the show, for our football league, our NASCAR leagues, stuff like that. Handmade wooden trophies that are just amazing. So check out 357 Woodworks on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. You can check out, he posts videos almost weekly, new videos of some new lumber that he found, or, he had a buddy that has a farm and they had an old barn that fell down. It's just a little barn, like a little utility barn that fell down, but the wood was like 100-year-old hardwood and was still in great condition. Scott went and got that. He's going to use that for some new stuff that he's making there at the workshop. So check out 357 Woodworks on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. Check out the videos that he has, and you can check out their great line of products that they have. He's got some stuff that he keeps on hand, so if you want to order it, he's got it. He can get it to you right away. If you have an idea of something that you'd want, maybe a little desktop or a countertop or something that you want custom made, you can get a hold of Scott and see what he can do. I know he's had ideas like, hey, can you do something like this? And he's like, yeah. So he can do custom stuff as well. So check out 357 Woodworks, and a big shout out to them for being our studio sponsor. Now about the picture that I posted, a couple pictures today. Actually, one was the wreath. It's a dog wreath. It says beware of dog kisses, something like that. We got that hanging on our side door that Bree made over there at Margazzano Design. She made that. And then she made the glasses, the cutting board, serving board, and coasters. Those are coasters, a set of four coasters. I've got them sitting right here next to me in the studio. Amazing. The craftsmanship is awesome. The little coasters with our logo on there. That's pretty awesome. And the cutting board is pretty cool. And then the glasses that you see there, you got some tall, like beer glasses, and you got some short little, I guess it would be wine glasses as well, that have our logo etched into them. She does this etching that she's done that for us before. We've got the nice big beer cup here. It's never had beer in it, but got a nice big beer cup here that says Talking Dirty on it, which is usually what we'd be doing right now. I'm just doing a little, little sponsorship stuff here, talking about some of our great sponsors since I'm kind of riding solo. I think Eric might be a little early. I think since he's on, let's go ahead and get him on. We'll start talking to him and see how Eric's doing. Let's go ahead and cue it up here. Eric, hello.
How you doing? I'm better now that you say I'm early. I was thinking I was late.
Oh, no. I figured you'd be on about 9 o'clock, but no, this is perfect. We'll get you to join us tonight. Anyway, I guess we'll do a little talking
dirty. Talk about the draft instead of racing, right?
Yeah, that's coming up too. the good drafting we had this past Sunday. But yeah, we got a football draft coming up this weekend too. But no, we're joined now by Eric Westendorf. He is Big E, also known as Big E, over there at Lernerville Speedway. Eric, thanks for coming on tonight and being a part of the show again.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure. It's one of the favorite things I get to do at the start of the season. You know, I know a lot of, you know, people that listen to your show may not be weekly fans of ours, but we always hope they, you know, at least make one trip a year to come out and see us, whether that's the Firecracker, the Silver Cup, or, you know, what I just texted to you. You know, I came home from baseball practice and turned on High Limit, and then, you know, I saw your message, so I figured I'd jump on. So we're really, really excited to have the High Limit series at Lernerville this year for the Commonwealth Clash. So lots of opportunities to get to Lernerville this year.
Oh yeah, and we'll talk about some of those races you just mentioned, because we'll talk about that schedule that you guys have over there at Lernerville. Plus, the schedule, I mean, you guys just had your opening weekend this past Friday. We'll talk about that as well. But real quick, I want to kind of get it out of the way. Christina wanted me to ask you about, you know, the whole Facebook thing that happened about a month ago, and to kind of clear the air and to let the fans know, you know, that was nothing to do with the racetrack. And if fans do show up, you know, I've had some people ask me, if I do go to a race there, can I take some videos or pictures? And I said, well, we're going to have Eric on. Let me ask him. So, you know, to kind of clear the air, what happened? What was the deal with that? And if fans do come to Lernerville, you know, can they take some pictures and videos of the racing?
The short answer is absolutely. Yeah, things have changed a lot over the last few years. And, you know, so it was a Tuesday afternoon, and I don't remember why, but I just happened to be off work that day. And I was out back, fortunate enough to have an above ground pool. I'm not a high roller with an in ground pool and, you know, big fancy 6-digit backyard. But I was fortunate enough, you know, through some support from my uncle and my mother-in-law to have a kind of a pre-owned above ground pool. I got four boys and we play a lot of sports, and probably not home as much as we should to have a pool. But I just happened to be in the back, pumping some water, you know, some melted snow off my winter cover. And I got a text message from one of our photographers and said, you know, what's going on? I'm like, I have no idea. I'm in the backyard working. You tell me. And next thing I know, it's going viral. And, Justin Fiedler from Dirt Tracker is, and I don't put any blame on him. He saw something on social media that he thought was intriguing, and he's got a great following. I've been a fan of his work since he was on Open Red with my buddy Ross Weiss. I don't know time-wise if Justin was with the World Racing Group when they still owned the track or if it was shortly after that and we still had a World of Outlaws races. But, you know, I've known Justin. I've worked with Justin. I have a ton of respect and still do. So long story short, we're still not sure where the post came from. Have some suspicions. There's really no way of proving it, but whoever made that post, and the post was under the name, I think it was John Antoniono. Never heard of the guy. Never, you know, there's a guy from a neighboring town, because I, you know, started jumping on Facebook and like, who is this guy? Because we, you know, in the off season, we switched Lernerville TV. The first 3 years, we've been on the Speed Sport TV Rivet platform. And I was, you know, kind of the lead on the project for the first 2 years. And we hired a gentleman last year who absolutely fantastic with tech stuff and really took Lernerville TV to the next level last year, to the point where we're doing a bunch of Saturday and Sunday stuff. And he was tech savvy enough that he was confident that, you know, we could, you know, move away from, you know, Speed Sport and Rivet and host our own platform, which, you know, some of the profit sharing that goes in with Speed Sport TV would go away, and, you know, we would, you know, be able to maintain all of the profit. And he was confident that we could handle the customer service, the hosting, the streaming, all that kind of stuff. So I kind of backed off the project. because he was a great leader, brought in a bunch of new people, really pushed them, you know, beyond their comfort level, and all around did a great job with the project. So I'm not familiar with everyone that's on that now Dirt TV team. You know, it's now Learnerville TV on the Dirt TV network. We do a bunch of enduro stuff. We do a bunch of – we do some bull riding and boxing and indoor motocross in the off season, just to keep the content coming. You know, we know we're probably never going to compete with Flow and Dirt Vision, but, you know, we wanted to increase our content, and he was vital in that. And so, like I said, he took the lead, and, you know, there were a lot of people working for the platform that I wasn't familiar with. So right away I reached out to one of the owner's sons is involved in the Dirt TV stuff as well. And I'm like, who is this guy? He's like, I have no clue. I've never heard of it. We just got wind of it too, because he's, you know, I know a lot of people think that, you know, there's a lot of full-time employees at Learnerville, and there's just not. So all the Thompsons that own the track, and Rubus is the one son, you know, they're working at Scrapyard during the day. So, you know, they kind of took a late lunch, and we're trying to figure out what was going on. And best we can tell, you know, whether it was a targeted attack or a spoof of some kind, but some person posing as Learnerville PR director. And we've had exactly two PR directors in the last, I've been at the track 17 years now. So I was a PR director in 2007, and in about 2015 or 16, I handed over the reins to Gary Heeman, and there's been nobody else. Jason Shank came on board last year or 2 years ago to help with PR stuff. He's now our general manager. None of us has ever heard of this guy. By the time it got out on social media, and, you know, Justin got a hold of it, and he's got such a massive following from Dirt Tracker that, you know, kind of damage was done at that point. It was viral. And even when, you know, we put out a statement, we were very measured with our response because we wanted to address it, because it, you know, wasn't posted by us. We had no intention of preventing people from taking pictures or recording videos. Now, the signs that, you know, after we put out the statement that someone posted, well, you know, if that's fake, then why are these signs up? The intent of the signs last year, I think they were put up somewhere between the Commonwealth Clash and the Stampede. The intent of the sign was, you know, to try to deter people from live streaming, because it's, you know, it's kind of like when you go to, you know, a movie theater or a concert or, you know, an NFL game or a NASCAR race, you know, there's broadcasting rights to that. And whether it's, you know, Flow that's there for the Firecracker, the Silver Cup, the Commonwealth Clash, those kind of things, you know, they're one of the biggest pieces of that streaming is the exclusivity. So, you know, we don't want other people to live stream. And I understand that, you know, John Smith from, you know, Butler right up the road probably doesn't have a huge following and is not taking, you know, a lot of money away from the streaming platform. But, you know, that was kind of the nature of those signs. And I understand, you know, the wording of the sign was very loose, and a lot of, you're familiar with contracts, read a lot of legal things, you know, you try to leave things worded as loosely as possible, so it covers a broad spectrum. You kind of protect yourself and, you know, give some flexibility to address problems that arise. But, you know, those were already gone before that post went viral. Those pictures were taken last year. Obviously, we didn't have any events since October. So those signs were already gone. But, you know, again, at that point, it had gone as viral as something in the dirt racing community can go viral. But it's really kind of been a blessing in disguise, because, you know, Justin has, you know, now two different times. So that Tuesday, a couple weeks ago when it first came out, and then, you know, following up here on opening night, you know, again, Justin has a huge platform, a lot of followers. And, you know, Don Martin, who founded the track, it's still Don Martin's Learnerville Speedway. His kind of, you know, motto is always say whatever you will about Learnerville, just make sure you spell it right. So, you know, the downside is, you know, there's information that got out that was not put out by us, was, you know, absolutely not true. But Learnerville Speedway got put on the radar of a lot of people nationwide, and there's always a bunch of trolls that jump on. And, you know, for the most part, our drivers, our photographers, you know, they reached out. And like I said, one of our main photographers is the first one that brought it to my attention. And, you know, we had a lot of support from the people that should be supporting us and reached out and, instead of running with something that they saw on the internet, reached out, you know, to me, who they knew was always involved in stuff, and kind of got the truth, and they helped, you know, support once things came out. But no, I mean, we want people to take pictures of their favorite drivers and, you know, record videos. And like I said, we don't want someone streaming the whole night. Right. You know, that's what we do with Learnerville TV. When the big series come in, that's what Flow Racing does. And, you know, at some point down the road, we, you know, can foster a better relationship with the world of outlaws. You know, that's what those streaming platforms are for. So we don't want somebody streaming it for free on Facebook and Twitter. But again, you know, we can only police so much when there's 2, 5, 10,000 people there. You know, we hope that the fans understand that, you know, the streaming platforms are revenues for the series and for the tracks, and, you know, to work with us and not against us on those things. But yeah. It got out of control, but, you know, end of the day, you know, it wasn't true. And, you know, people know that now. And here we are at the start of the season. So everything worked out. It was kind of a high blood pressure day on that Tuesday, and, you know, trying to do the best we could to get the truth out. And, you know, some people still don't believe it and are skeptical that, you know, that it was something that we put out and we backtracked from based on the backlash. And I wish we were that savvy to put out public relations. Like, you can't buy PR like that. You know, we put out a thing, we increased the purses to 2,000 to win, and it was shared by maybe 100 some people and had like 5 or 10 responses. You know, something bad goes out and it goes viral. I mean, like I said, we wish we could be that savvy of, you know, PR guys to make something go viral, whether underhanded or not, but it just wasn't true. It's, you know, you know, like I said, we have a pretty good idea of where it came from, and that's something that we'll keep under our hats and address, you know, directly with the person or persons if something ever, you know, more comes of it, or, you know, should surface again. But it was unfortunate, but all things considered, it really worked out, and, you know, really kind of launched our season in a lot of ways.
Well, glad that we could get that out of the way and buried. You know, like I said, I had people even messaging me, and I said, well, I was there a couple of years ago, and I said, I don't remember seeing signs like that, but I was also all over the place, so I wasn't really looking for anything like that. I said, but I said, when Eric's on, I'll ask him. So that's all I could do, and we got that out of the way. But before you came on, I'm joined tonight by Eric Wessendorf of Learnerville Speedway, joining me tonight on the Barbasol Shea phone lines. Before you came on, Eric, I was kind of talking about some of the sponsors of our show, and I'm looking through your website here, learnerville.com, and I noticed some of the same names have popped up here that I've seen in the past few years as far as sponsorships go for the track. And, of course, a lot of people don't realize the small-town short tracks that we like to talk to and get on our show, not only do they – depend on people showing up every week and butts in the seats to help bring revenue in and to help keep the purses high for these drivers. But you guys also depend on sponsors as well. You know, people that watch NASCAR, they see drivers get out of the car and they got sponsors all over their fire suits. Well, it's kind of the same when somebody comes to a track like Learnerville, Wayne County, Midvale, stuff like that. You guys have your sponsors all over the place as well. And I'm looking, and I see some of the same names, you know, Marburger Farm, Dairy, the People's Natural Gas, Deal Automotive. So it looks like you guys are doing pretty good with the sponsorships and have some people coming back again this year as well.
Yeah, it's not that we depend on those sponsors. We literally couldn't run a weekly program and you know, we acknowledge that the drivers, like the purse still isn't where it should be to keep up with the economy and the cost of everything. But, you know, in good faith, we're doing the best we can. I think prior to this year, we increased the purse either 2 or possibly even 3 years in a row at a 5% increase, which doesn't sound like, I mean, I have a pretty good job and my annual increase is between 3 and 4%. So, you know, the purse has increased more than my annual, you know, salary increases. And, you know, this year going to 17%, going to 2000 to win for the sprints and late models, and 1600 for the modifieds and 600 for the pro stocks. Unfortunately, when you have those top three headlining divisions, none of them get the amount they should. You know, we could take one series or one division out, but, you know, which one do you take out. Or if you go to a two-race rotation, then, you know, every week a third of your fans that because everyone has a favorite division. I think a lot of our Fab Four fans, you know, kind of like the World Finals, the draw is seeing all three of those on a night. And to have the same sponsors year in and year out, I was just talking about that on opening night, and I'm pretty sure we're closing in on the 10-year mark for all four of our division sponsors. So, like I said, People's Natural Gas has been with us for almost 10 years now. If this isn't the 10th year, it's the 9th. With the, you know, they've been the presenting sponsor of our 410 Sprint Division. Precise Racing Products came on that same year with super late models. In addition to sponsoring the division, they have parts and tire trucks there. Their headquarters is actually just a mile and a half down the road, so it's really convenient for them. They've been a great partner with us. They support all the divisions. Deal Automotive has been with us for a long time, and in fact, our former general manager, Gary Rich Jr., when he left the track, he left to go work for Deal. They made him an offer he couldn't refuse. He's, you know, their corporate truck, commercial truck sales manager. So they've been with us for a long time. And then Millerstown Pick Apart, which is essentially a junkyard. It's a kind of sister companies, Millerstown Pick Apart, D&D Auto Salvage. It's Michael Norris's family that own and operate that. And, you know, Michael has never even driven in the division. He and his dad are both late model drivers, but, you know, the other three divisions were sponsored and, you know, they jumped on the pro stocks and, you know, all those sponsors have been with us 10 years and it's just, it's unheard of, really. And it's their loyalty and support is, you know, like I said, we don't just depend on it. We literally couldn't do what we do on a weekly basis without them. Marburger Farm Dairy, I think they're in their fourth or fifth year now. They stepped up. We had a great marketing partnership with really their rival, the Turner Dairy Farm, which is a little bit closer to Pittsburgh. Marburger is up in, you know, up above Butler. So when, you know, Turner had a change in management, they kind of went away from, you know, sponsoring a lot of sports and stuff and, you know, went more towards social media and, you know, kind of working with some other local companies like the Oakmont Bakery and Eaton Park and stuff like that. So, you know, they went kind of a different direction with their sponsorship. Marburger Farm Dairy jumped right in. I mean, it would be like, you know, Pepsi backing away and Coke's like, yep, we're on it. You know, Marburger had wanted it. You know, you can't chase away a loyal sponsor, but, you know, Marburger had been chomping at the bit to get in, and it was just the perfect opportunity, and they've been great, great marketing partner there. They've got tea and, you know, chocolate milk products that, you know, in all of our concession stands, and they give us the coolers and all that kind of stuff. So, but then the biggest and longest standing marketing partnership, and I'm closing in on 50 years old, and number one Cochran Automotive has been a sponsor of Leonardville Speedway before I was even alive. We recently passed 50 years of sponsorship with that company. So Rob Cochran, wow. Jack Crow, we call him the mayor of Leonardville. He's been kind of the liaison between number one Cochran and Leonardville for all those years. So, you know, they've sponsored Lynn Geisler's car for decades. And, you know, Lynn has since retired from driving and still owns a car that Alex Free drives. But, yeah, 50 years of sponsorship. I mean, that even in pro sports, it's just, you know, completely unheard of. But and there's been opportunities in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years. A lot of the dealerships that still seem like they're locally and family owned have been bought out by these, you know, large national and international corporations, but they keep that name of, you know, Peter Todich, you know, Chevrolet or Eric Westendorf Ford, because they have that name recognition, but they're really now owned by these large conglomerates. But Rob has continued to keep it family owned. He's in the day-to-day operations. I worked for that company for a year. Fantastic company to work for. The benefits are great. They treat their employees as well as they treat their customers. It's, you know, I can speak firsthand account of both being a buyer of their products and also, you know, selling vehicles for them. So, we have so many other sponsors too, but that core of those six sponsors, and then Terry Bowser Excavating as well. The track surface, you know, we always talk about Dan Bauman as the dirt whisperer. He does a great job with track prep. that if it wasn't for Terry Bowser and the clay that he brings us, Dan couldn't do what he does. So there's so many people behind the scenes, and, you know, I always encourage fans that, you know, I'm not going to tell you not to go buy a car from somebody else if you can get a better deal, but at the very least, go give number one Cochran Deal Automotive the opportunity to earn your business, because it's important to support the companies, support local racing, because, you know, they need to know that they have a return on their investment, and the more people that go buy cars from them, the more likely they are to continue to support the sport that we all love.
Yeah, you know, you talk about Deal Automotive, and that kind of hits close to home, because we just had a huge dealership here in our county that has been a huge car dealer for decades. I mean, when I was a little kid, you always heard about people going to Wakeham Ford or Wakeham, you know, I think they had Ford and Honda and different car lots like that, but they just got bought out by Deal Automotive. So one of the biggest car dealerships here in my county where we're at right now was bought out by Deal Automotive this past fall. So, you know, it's neat to see, you know, a racetrack that I deal with for the last 4 or 5 years. One of your sponsors is kind of part of my hometown now. So that's pretty neat to see, you know, how big they have expanded to be in a different state even. So, you know, that's yeah. Pretty neat.
Yeah. So they've been in the Butler County, Grove City area, which is, you know, still Butler County. And then there was, I don't think which the first one, you know, right across the border. And then they've kind of expanded out that way to Sharon and, you know, Maslin and that area. And one of the reasons they've expanded that way is because Rob Cochran buys up everything like in and around Pittsburgh area. So, you know, and Deal has made some in-grounds like out Robinson Township, Moon Township, like out near the Pittsburgh International Airport. But, you know, a lot of times they get in a bidding war, you know, with Rob Cochran or, you know, somebody else. And they've really, you know, found a sweet spot, Butler, Beaver County, and, you know, out in those, you know, those easternmost counties in Ohio. But I've met and known Karina Deal and Rich Grossman as a general manager for Deal Automotive. Great people. They support local racing. They've sponsored Pittsburgh's Pennsylvania Motor Speedway for years. They're now, you know, just because of where their dealerships are, they're also a sponsor of Sharon Speedway. So great people that, you know, believe in local racing and, you know, appreciate the loyalty of our fans. So sure they're bringing the same great prices and customer service to where you're at.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And you talk about Marburger. We'll talk about some of your sponsors here real quick as well. But Marburger kind of does something unique, too. They're part of your guys' victory lane, I believe, right? They have something that you guys give each week. The winners of each division in victory lane get a little something from Marburger, don't they?
Yes, they do. So everybody does. We encourage them anyway. Yeah, to do the Marburger tea chug. And again, that's something that, in terms of the tea, started with, Turner's when they first came on, for as long as I can remember for decades, since I was a fan, like in the late 80s, early 90s, in addition to getting a trophy and a hat from the sponsor, the drivers always got a bag of chips from Snyder's of Berlin. So whenever Turner's came on board, like, you know, can we, you know, give a pint of tea to the drivers with the potato chips? Like, yeah, absolutely. That's a great idea. So obviously when Marburger came on, they did the same thing. And unfortunately, Snyder's has been bought out by us, and we just haven't been able to get them back on board to get chips back in victory lane. So when that went away, Toma Meat Market was one of our sponsors. So for several years, all of our drivers in victory lane got a pack of meat sticks from Toma and a jug of Marburger iced tea. So working on with one of our sponsors, Franklin's Neighborhood Markets, they make fantastic hoagies. I'm talking like legit, you know, 12-inch, 15-inch subs, and they're like $6.99. So trying to work with them and to get the subs in victory lane with the iced tea. But just, you know, something extra, just, you know, it's great marketing, great product placement for our sponsors, but it's also nice, you know, I know for a long time, you know, the one driver, Kevin Boland, who I've heard still isn't quite retired in the modifieds. We haven't seen him for several years, but I heard he comes and sits and watches the races a lot, and every once in a while I'll get a tease that, you know, he's not completely retired, but I know their crew always requested the barbecue chips and cider, so, and, you know, even with the meat sticks, like, you know, it was kind of like a reward for the crew chief or, you know, the car owner's son or something like that. It's just something in addition to the trophy, addition to the hat and the, you know, the feature winner sticker that the drivers appreciate. And like I said, it's great product placement for our sponsors.
Boy, I don't know. You want to talk about hoagies. You want to talk Philadelphia versus Pittsburgh. I've had some.
We do sandwiches here with French fries. We don't corner the market on cheesesteaks. That's for sure.
I was gonna say, I think Philadelphia might have you guys beat when it comes to the sandwiches, but we'll get back to some of the racing. You wanted to talk a little bit of.
Wait, hold on. Do we compare Super Bowl trophies and Stanley Cups, or are we just talking hoagies?
We should probably
get back to racing then.
No, we'll talk NFL. The draft is coming up. I believe it's this weekend, correct? The draft is this weekend?
Thursday night, yeah.
Yeah, Thursday night.
Yeah, and I'm breaking a longstanding tradition. So the whole way back from when I went to Penn State, which, you know, I know a lot of your fan base is there by Ohio State, and I'm a big Ohio State fan too. I love the rivalry, but I'm a Penn State guy. But I was also a big Terrell Pryor guy. He was my high school, Freeport, had a big rivalry since I was in school with Jeanette. So I saw Terrell when he was in 9th and 10th grade and, you know, followed him the whole way through. So I've been an Ohio State fan for a long time, probably as long as I've been a Penn State fan. So I appreciate the rivalry. So there's no hatred there for me. But even as far back when I was at Penn State, we would sit and watch the drafts. Like, I'm talking mid-90s, we would get USA Today's. And I don't even know when Mel Kiper started the mock draft, but we used to do mock drafts, you know, in college in the mid-90s and kind of predict who would take who. But my college roommates and I have been getting together to watch the draft for a long time. And a friend of mine that I went to, one of my roommates lives in the same town now, and we always go to his place or my place and watch the opening draft. Well, I'm going to a conference, leaving tomorrow for Atlanta. So he is actually talking about either flying or driving to Atlanta just so we don't break the tradition of watching the draft together. So, it's something. It's one of those things that, you know, it's kind of a bonding moment, you know, keeps, you know, college roommates together. We also have a fantasy football league. So we try to do things to stay in touch, because as you get older and have kids and careers, it gets harder and harder to get together with people. So we get together for March Madness, we get together for a fantasy draft, and we always get together for the NFL draft. So something I always look forward to, and it should be interesting this year, because there's a lot of talk around, you know, the Eagles either maybe drafting a running back, or, you know, saw something that came out, ended up, you know, kind of like we did, where it was kind of a false leak that, you know, they may be in talks to trade for Travis Henry. And I know the Eagles fans would love to have Travis Henry, because he's just a monster, but it may be better for the long term of the team to get Bijan Robinson. But the draft is always so much fun, and it's a long night, and I always regret it on Friday morning when I have to go to work, and especially Friday night. Yeah, the following Friday night at the racetrack, when, you know, I was up till 1 or 2 a.m. watching the draft and go to work on short sleep and then go back-to-back to the track and trying to keep track of the draft on Friday night while the racing's going on. But it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is. It's always neat to see, you know, a lot of these kids that come up through the college and then get that chance to finally get drafted to the NFL, you know, to watch that. Is pretty neat, and obviously it's a big thing. I mean, it's the NFL draft, and it's funny how the NFL draft, you know, the NBA has draft, baseball has, you know, MLB has draft, but they're just not as big as the NFL draft, and there's just something about the NFL draft. But I mean, Pittsburgh, they're looking at, I've seen some mock drafts. Pittsburgh's looking at some offensive linemen, maybe. What do you think of Pittsburgh since Big Ben has retired, and how do you think that offense is coming along?
Yeah, so Big Ben is my all-time favorite Steeler. When I was at number one Cochran, I actually had the opportunity to meet him in person, and I know there were some, you know, some personal issues when he was younger, and I think in addition to marketing the draft, I think one thing the NFL has done really well in the past decade is really, you know, they have like a rookie symposium and trying to make sure that, you know, these guys that, you know, and a lot of guys that come to the NFL come from absolutely nothing. Like football was their only way out of poverty or the inner city or, you know, very rural parts of, you know, America where, you know, they're pretty much their only chance to stay out of a poverty cycle or, you know, having to work 60 hours a week to make ends meet was getting to the NFL and, you know, making sure those players are supported and investing their money and, you know, being mindful of the company they keep. You know, I think the NFL has really done a really nice job of that the last decade or so, is helping those young players be more responsible and mature with their status and with their money. But I've loved Ben since day one. I love the gunslinger mentality. Never out of a game. We could be down 21 points in the third quarter. But, man, as long as we had Ben, we had a chance. And like I said, I'm a Penn State guy, so Steelers kind of broke my heart last year in a draft when they drafted Kenny Pickett. And it has nothing to do with Kenny. I've also met Kenny. One of my son's best friends had a medical issue when he was in junior high. And their family, the kid's dad is a Pitt grad, and he actually came to our school for a benefit and, you know, surprised him at a basketball game. So I know the human being that Kenny is, but being a Penn State guy and taking Kenny in the first round when I really think we could have got him in the second round, I think he's going to be a solid player. I don't think he's going to be, you know, 15, 17 year old, you know, Hall of Fame caliber quarterback like, you know, Ben was. I would love to be wrong with that, but I think in Kenny we probably have a 5 to 8 year starter, and at some time we have a chance to upgrade. But putting a lot of good weapons around him, I really think we need an offensive or a defensive lineman in the draft. But sentimental, you know, my second all-time favorite Steeler is Joey Porter, and Joey Porter Jr. is a Penn State guy, so sentimentally, I'm really hoping that we draft Joey Porter Jr. You could always use a good cornerback, and we haven't had good cornerbacks for a while. Joe Hayden, you know, is retired, but I'd love to have Joey. But, you know, said my heart says Joey Porter, but my head says we need, you know, offensive or defensive linemen. And if we can get is it Jalen Carter, the kid from Georgia that got himself into a little bit of trouble, that's kind of, you know, he probably should be a top 5 or 10 pick, but they're saying may slide to like 15 or 20. If we could get a top 10 talent in, you know, in our draft slot, I mean, I think you have to consider that. And then Paris Johnson, I think, is the lineman from Ohio State. I think he'd be a great fit. You know, putting a strong left tackle on Kenny Pickett's blind side will help Kenny's long-term success for sure. So we have a lot of good options, and maybe we'll trade up, maybe we'll trade back. But, you know, the Steelers always make moves on draft day, so it'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, yes, it will. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what goes on. And it's neat to go and look at some of the mock picks, you know, mock drafts that some of these sports writers put together, and then to, you know, to see the first round actually play out and see how close they were. And, you know, because, I mean, a lot of these guys that know the ends of the NFL, you know, they can pretty much know what's going to happen. But it's neat to see them make predictions and then see how true they are and how it turns out. But, yeah, the NFL draft is this weekend, starts Thursday night, so it'll be neat to see that. But we are talking with Eric Westendorf of Lernerville Speedway. Let's get back to racing, Eric, and let's talk about this past weekend because it was Lernerville's opening night of racing on Friday night, and you guys had really good weather. Now, I worked Friday night, and I was soaked by the time I got done working Saturday morning because it rained all night here Friday night. But you guys got lucky and didn't have any of the rain until Saturday. So it's a good thing you guys run on Fridays. But you guys had great opening night weather, and you had some great victory lane drivers. Some that got big wins, and some that picked up right where they left off. Let's just start with the late models and John Garvin Jr. picking up the win in the Precise late models.
Yeah, and if opening night was kind of the greatest hits, right? So three of our track champions won, and then Brian Swartzlander, who's our all-time win leader in the modifieds, won. So If you go to a concert, you want to see the greatest hits. You don't want to see the B-side, maybe obscure, or, you know, tracks from, you know, albums. You want to see the greatest hits, right? So,
right.
But yeah, John Garvin has kind of come full circle. So he started his career in a late model. His dad drove a limited and then a super late model. And John grew up driving late models. He got married or started dating and eventually married Liz Mattis, who is the daughter of Brent and sister of Brandon. So he switched over to sprint cars for a while when he, you know, got involved with the Mattis family, and they went out on the All-Star Tour for a little bit. But, you know, he was a strong runner and picked up on it quick, but never had the success that he had in a late model. And he is still married to Liz, so, you know, he didn't go away from the late model because of family relationship. They are still married. She was in Victory Lane. But he came back to late models a couple years ago. He was actually a teammate of Colton Flinter last year. They've since went different directions, so Johnny's kind of out on his own again now. Picked up right where he left off and, you know, won the championship last year and picked up the opening night feature win.
And speaking of picking up right where they left off, let's talk about People's Sprints division and A.J. Flick. A few years ago, it seemed like AJ couldn't get it right. It seemed like he just missed every weekend, and then when he did hit the setup, he did not miss at all. And it seems like he's been winning almost every weekend now for the last year or two. But AJ Flick picks up right where he has left off and got the win Friday night, beating kind of a home driver for me, the Jacobs family, which is has a very big role in Wayne County Speedway, but Trey Jacobs coming in second there behind AJ Flick Friday.
Yeah, and I love Wayne County, so we could talk about that a little bit later. It's a great racy little joint. I usually try to get out there at least once a year, but yeah. So the other way we really got lucky on Friday night, in addition to the weather, is Attica rained out. So the combination of them raining out and us increasing the purse to $2,000, because if it was $1,600 to win, maybe a few of those guys come from Attica, but certainly not, you know, 6, 7, 8 of them like we had. So we got Trey Jacobs and Scotty Field, who's out with the All-Stars, and Dale Blaney and Zeph Sabo. So we got, you know, a really nice influx from Attica canceling. And I finally got to Attica last year or 2 years ago, one or the other, for the first time, because we race on Friday nights and they race on Friday nights, so it's really hard for me to get there. But I was able to get out for an All-Star show a year or two ago, and that's a fantastic track too. But, yeah, I mean, it was a loaded field of cars, and, you know, AJ started on the front row, which, you know, sounds easy. Defending track champion, now a six-time track champion, starts on the front row. He should win. But that's easy to say. But when you have those cars up there with him that, you know, holding one of them off, much less multiple cars off, I mean, he really ran a fantastic race. And, you know, one thing that AJ has always done well is, you know, if he has a third or fourth place car, he brings it home in second or third place. Like, he won't push it. He won't. He's not a records or checkers guy, because it's coming out of his own pocket. He's another guy, fantastic with his sponsors and has a lot of loyal sponsors, but at the end of the day, he knows if he tears up equipment, he's rebuilding it. He and his family are paying for it. So he takes really good care of his equipment. But when he has a chance to win, you know, he was able to stay up front. They put a lot of time and attention, you know, into their equipment. And he knows the track very well. And especially, you know, he's good on all conditions now. But, man, when that track is slick like it was on Friday night, you know, he's almost unstoppable. You know, Cy Lynch, who, you know, he was out at Williams Grove Friday, so I was a little bit bummed and disappointed that Cy wasn't there. I've been kind of building it as the Battle of Apollo. So we have, you know, two third-generation stars from Apollo, Pennsylvania, and it's so much fun when Cy and AJ are racing against each other. But Cy's maybe a little bit better when the track is heavy and fast. And, you know, when it's slick like that, AJ is, you know, just hands down the best we have right now. And, you know, even in the fast and tacky, you know, he's really come a long way with that program. And the more you race, you know, you've seen all the different, you know, track conditions. And it wasn't the case this Friday night, but a lot of times based on weather, turns 1 and 2 can be completely different than 3 and 4. And a lot of times, you know, the top side of 3 and 4 is good and the bottom is, you know, better in 1 and 2. And like I said, that wasn't really the Friday night. It was hard, slick on Friday night. And when it's those conditions and when AJ starts up front, you know, even with, you know, invaders from Ohio and All-Stars, you know, a lot of times those guys are running for second because you give AJ the front row, there's not a lot of guys that can come into Lernerville unless it's, you know, the top All-Stars or the Outlaws or the high-limit guys. But, you know, regular Friday night show, if you put AJ on the front row and dry slick, you're probably racing for second.
And talk about getting your money's worth with Dale Blaney showing up as well. I mean, you want to talk about a history of racing. You can't get too much bigger on a Friday night at Lernerville than having Dale Blaney show up to race.
Yeah, he's another one of my all-time favorites. So, like I said, I started going to Lernerville on a regular basis in the late 80s, early 90s. And he started there his rookie year. I can still remember the blue and silver, very basic-looking commercial truck and trailer car. And he was our rookie of the year, and he was there part of that second year. And then he was out on the Outlaw All-Star Tour and multiple-time All-Star champion. He has won pretty much every big race there is at this point, except for the Knoxville Nationals. He raced a lot with the Outlaws, and still just, you know, an absolute pleasure to watch race. Called the low rider, you know, for a reason, but I can remember one of the best battles I remember seeing is him racing with Joey Saldana, and Joey was on the top, and Dale had found some moisture on the bottom of two, and Brandon Mattis is one of our guys. He's so good at finding that moisture off the bottom of turn two as well when the track's like that. But I remember on that night, Saldana was leading. It was Cody Dara, was leading, running the high side. And Dale found something on the bottom of two and just kept cutting into the lead. And by the time he got around Cody on that low spot of two, it was too late because Dale was never given that spot back up. And, you know, Cody went to that line and stayed on his tail tank for most of the rest of the race. But, you know, it was just such an advantage. It was like a launching pad off the bottom of two. And then Cody did stop down on the front straightaway when Dale was in victory lane that night and wasn't real pleased about how Dale made that pass on the back stretch. But Dale was just a great guy from a great family. I was fortunate enough. I was the PR director there when Lou was still alive, and I spent one night in the press box. And I think it might have been the year before he passed away, actually. Spent a night in the press box. The weather wasn't great because a lot of times when the weather was nice, when I was PR director, I'd be up on the roof. But for whatever reason that night, the weather wasn't great. I was in the press box, and I sat and talked to Lou and Kate for most of the night. And, you know, just such a blessing to talk to, you know, someone like that. And just to see the success that Dave and Dale have both had, and now Ryan, you know, having more success in NASCAR. I still believe that Dave Blaney is one of the best, you know, right up there with Dale Earnhardt of, you know, like research and development guys in NASCAR. And I think that's why he stayed in the sport so long, because he didn't have a lot of success on the track, but he was so good at the R&D. And that really gave Ryan the opportunity that he has now. And, you know, obviously he's a pretty big star in NASCAR. So for that family to come from Hartford, Ohio, and for them to still come to Lernerville, because we get Dave sometimes too for the Silver Cup or the Commonwealth Clash. It's, you know, it takes me back to the late 80s, early 90s when Dave and Dale were running, you know, the All-Stars and Outlaws. And like I said, we got at least a year and a half, if not 2 years, of Dale there every Friday night, and family and great drivers.
Yeah, yeah. Also, speaking of some great drivers, getting his 101st win in the deal modifieds was Brian Schwartzlander Friday night from Leechburg, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, and it took – Brian was stuck at 99 for quite a bit of time, and he's nearing the end of his career. So, and then also the McCutcheon Enterprises has been his primary sponsor, I think, since the early 90s. So they've been together for over 30 years. And unfortunately, we lost Chad McCutcheon, who's one of the, you know, the son generation of that family. He passed away a few years ago. So that, you know, his – Chad's death, and then, you know, just Brian and the crew getting older. They hadn't had a lot of success. I mean, it's, you know, kind of relative, right? I mean, he's always finished in the top five, but Our younger drivers like Matt Williamson came through, you know, for a while and won a bunch of races, and now he's out winning Super Dirt Car Series races and championships. But, you know, Rex King Jr. and Garrett Krummert, Jeremiah Shingledecker, it's kind of top-heavy. There's five or six guys that can win on any given week. So it took Brian a little bit of time to get that 100th win, and unfortunately, I wasn't there that night. So he got it on championship night. My son was a senior in high school this year, and he plays varsity football. So I was at my son's football game instead of at the championship night. So I had to watch, you know, Brian win his 100th race on Learnerville TV. And my uncle is Dick Schwartzlander, who is Brian's uncle as well. We're on other sides of the family, so Brian and I aren't directly related. But I've always considered myself kind of like an associate member of the Schwartzlander family, and I try to be impartial. And I think I do a pretty good job announcing, and previously PR director, of not making it known who my favorites are. And
right.
You know, not supposed to have favorites, but when you're related to people, and you know, like, you know, beside Lynch, I mean, a lot of people at Learnerville know that I worked on Chad Hill Sprint Car. Chad introduced me to my wife, so I have pretty strong connection with Cy Lynch as well. But, you know, I think I do a pretty good job of being diplomatic and not playing favorites. But it's hard, you know, as you get to know these drivers as human beings, as, you know, as said before, you know, with some other drivers, it's hard not to have favorites. But, you know, I've always thought it important in my positions as PR director and now track announcer to not make that obvious. I don't have a rooting interest in necessarily who wins. It's more the human side of it, because I've seen, you know, firsthand the hard work and the blood, sweat, and tears that go into it. And I just had a conversation with one of our drivers. You know, we'll talk about the pro stocks in a minute, but Cody Catellus came real close to winning the pro stock feature, and I was just messaging him today. And kind of in my role, kind of being the old guy now, you know, I feel kind of not really mentoring, but kind of encouraging the younger drivers. And Cody came so close to winning that first race that, you know, I kind of take a kind of like father, uncle kind of role and, you know, encouraging the drivers, you know, to keep going. And it's always awesome to see a driver win their first race, but it's also really cool. I think Brian is only the sixth driver in Learnerville history to have more than 100 wins. So that's really special, too, when they hit those milestones, whether it's 30, 40, 50 races, or in Brian's case, 100. It never gets old because there's so much that goes into it through the week, through the off season, you know, to culminate in victory lane. It never gets old for those guys. It really doesn't. Did I lose you? Peter, if you can hear me, I can't hear you. Hello, hello.
Are you there? Can you hear me now?
I am. Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Sorry, I had a little bit of technical difficulty.
No problem.
Okay.
Probably just indication
I'm
talking too much, right?
No. My microphone cut out somehow.
Gotcha.
But I was saying, you know, you talk about mentoring, you know, the younger drivers, and I can see how, and you said that, you know, early, try not to be, you know, biased when announcing or being PR director, but I can see how that emotional attachment would get, you know, you're associated with a track for so long. You see, you know, some of these younger guys come up through the ranks. I can see how that emotional attachment would get there, but you would have to, you know, kind of put that professional hat on and keep your emotions out of it. But I can see how hard that would be. I could imagine.
It really is. I still remember, I met Cy for the first time when he was 2 years old, when I was working on Chad Hill Sprint Car, and it was at Chad's parents. So Cy's mom is Chad's sister. So we were working on Ed there since divorce, Ed and Heather. But Ed, Chad was having some issues with the car on Friday night, so Ed came out to our shop and was working on stuff. And Cy was, he was probably 3 or 4 years old at this point. like I said, met him when I was two, but I think he was three or four at this point. And he was in one of those power wheel things in the front yard. And the look of determination on that kid's face at 3 or 4 years old in the power wheel, I looked at Heather and I'm like, he's going to be a sprint car driver someday. She's like, absolutely. And here, you know, fast forward, 20 years, and it's just extremely successful. He's grown up to be a great young man. Huge shoes to fill, though, right? You know, your grandfather's a Hall of Famer. Your grandmother's a Hall of Famer. Your dad's the best sprint car driver in the history of Learnerville Speedway. And it's a big shoes to fill, but Ty's done a great job. I know he would love to get, full-time ride in the All-Stars and Outlaws and still progressing, in that direction. But, he's had a great partnership with Josh Boffman the last few years. And I'm not sure if that just haven't had a chance to talk to Cy. And like I said, he was at Williams Grove this past Friday night. But looking at the car, I don't see the Bachmann Motorsports and, the sponsors that were on it before. So I'm not sure if they've parted company or not. But and Cy's done a great job with the big show. It's just what he's done at Kings Royal and the Knoxville National. It's just, great at qualifying and, just consistently getting better finishes. And, just evidence of, instead of staying, because Danny Dietrich gets beat up a lot about, not leaving the porch. And, Donnie Kreitz does really well at Port Royal and Williams Grove. But, at his age and his crew's age, they don't travel a lot. So those two kind of get beat up for not leaving the porch. But Cy's not afraid to leave the porch and, went to run Williams Grove Friday night instead of driving a half an hour to Learnerville. So it's always hard, when those drivers leave. So, like Tim Schaefer and Dale Blaney and then later Danny Holcraver and now Cy Lynch. So it is disappointing from a fan perspective and even as the announcer when, I feel like those guys should be with us on Friday night. So when they get out on the road and Greg Satterley too, with the late models and Matt Williamson, who was with us for a long time. It stinks when they're not there on Friday night, but to see them go from Learnerville and then step onto that national stage with the All-Stars and the Outlaws and Lucas Oil late model series, it's really neat to see that progression. But yeah, when you know someone from their child and, or, if you've known the families, for decades, it's hard not to, have a vested interest in the success of those drivers. But, like I said, we have new drivers every year and some of them are generational and some of them, like Corey McPherson, who's won 7 track champions with us, has no, history in local racing. He was a motocross driver for a long time and had too many injuries and, got in four wheels with a cage on him and, has won 7 track championships. So it's always a mixed bag, but, in my position, just getting to know people and getting to know them outside of the track, it really is, a blessing and something I don't take for granted.
Yeah. And going to the final, the Pick Apart Pro Stocks, the winner there, you talk about Cody just missing getting the win on opening night, but running double duty and getting the win in the Pro Stocks was Tyler Dietz of Saxonburg, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, and Tyler, great rivalry the past few years, several years now with, he and Corey McPherson, and Corey was so good for so long. It kind of took Tyler a while to break through and get his first win and then came so close for 2 or 3 years in a championship battle with Corey and then finally won that first track championship. And, now he's won 2. And because of his success in the Pro Stock, has been given the opportunity to race for the Houston brothers. Danny Houston was a longtime supporter and sponsor of my cousin Dan Swartzlander's team. Then was, I think, affiliated with a couple other drivers, but has, latched on, to Tyler Dietz. So Tyler struggled. It is a big jump going from the Pro Stocks to the late models. They look a lot alike now, but they drive a lot differently. And, just stepping up into that higher division, you're racing with Michael Norris and Jared Miley and Alex Free, and a lot of really other great drivers in that division. Pretty steep learning curve for Tyler, and he was getting pretty defeated and frustrated and finally broke through and won his first late model feature on championship night last season and has now put himself in, in that rank of being a top 5, competitor in the late models. And right now, past few years has been the man to beat in the pro stock. So, and he's a kid too, and he'd be the first to tell you, one of those, grew up in and around racing, but, literally grew up in the trailer park, kind of across 356. And there were times that he didn't have the money to get in the front gate, much less to have a car and get in the back gate. So he's had a lot of help from sponsors and, does a lot of his own cash now and has done really, really well for himself, not only, you know, with, you know, Dietz chassis that a lot of the pro stock drivers use now, but, you know, has grown Dietz Fabrication to the point where he just bought a much larger facility and is expanding his operation. So, you know, there's some drivers that come into the sport, you know, don't really want to stay with a silver spoon, but, you know, those generational drivers like Cy Lynch and Dale Blaney and Brandon Mattis who were kind of born into it. And then someone like Tyler Dietz, who literally is a fan that had an undying passion for it that has made himself a successful driver through blood, sweat, and tears and, you know, sacrificing and counting on car owners and sponsors to put him in a position to be successful. And it's really paid off. It's great to see. And, you know, just wish him all the best, you know, with his, not only his racing, but his business, because like I said, he literally came from nothing to be the best pro stock driver we have. And now one of the top late model drivers as well. It's every driver has a different story and they're all so unique, but they're all, you know, it's hard not to become fans and friends of those guys, just everything that goes into it. It's a lot more than showing up on a Friday night, jumping in a car and winning races. It's years and decades of grinding and sacrificing, and it's great to see someone like Tyler have so much success. But Cody Cattell, like I said, he's a young driver, another, you know, generational driver. His family has been racing at Pittsburgh's Pennsylvania Motor Speedway for as long as I can remember, and he's, you know, on the verge of having a lot of success, and one of those guys where once he wins his first race, probably win a handful and some championships as well.
That's, you know, those are the stories that you like to hear, and that's a big part of this show is getting to talk to the small town short tracks and the drivers that race at those tracks, because those are the stories you like to hear. You know, you grew up, you know, a fan and sometimes couldn't afford to get in to even watch a race, and now, like you said, has turned it into a successful business and successful racing career now. That's just, those are the stories you like to hear, and the stories that you were telling earlier about growing up, going to the racetrack yourself and seeing this driver come through and this driver come through and seeing some of the big name drivers that we think of historically now, you know, you were seeing as a kid when they were just getting started in their careers. So, you know, that's what we try and tell people so much about getting out to a small town short track like Wayne County, like Lernerville. You know, if somebody's never been there, you know, go. That's, you know, to make those memories. And especially, we'll talk about it here in a minute because we're going to get into your guys' schedule too. But, you know, a lot of these tracks that have discounted prices for kids, you know, whether it's 16 and under or 12 and under, you know, some tracks kids get in free, some tracks kids get in at a very reasonably discounted price. And those are the ones that are the future of the sport. And trying to get families out and keep it affordable for families to get to the racetracks on the weekends is important for you guys as well and invested in the sport and to keep it alive.
Yeah, it really is. And one thing we haven't talked about yet, one of the biggest improvements in the off season for us, and unfortunately we had some technical issues and it wasn't ready for opening night, and that was really disappointing for me as well as the fans. But we have a Jumbotron now on top of our scoreboard, which is really going to give us the opportunity to have more fan engagement. So, you know, through Lernerville TV, you know, those that aren't able to come to the track for whatever reason, you know, had the opportunity the last few years to watch on Lernerville TV. And we had a pre-race show where we would send, you know, somebody into the pits for about an hour before the race and record interviews, you know, 3-, 4-, 5-minute interviews, sometimes 10 minutes. Some drivers are long-winded like me, but just putting names to faces. But we weren't able you know, and we have some TVs around the Speedway grounds at concession stands, souvenir stands. But one of the things I'm really looking forward to the Jumbotron is being able to connect the names to the faces. You know, the guys that win a lot, like AJ and, you know, Tyler Dietz and Brian Swartzlander, Michael Norris, our fans know those faces, but there's so many guys that, and those guys make it look so easy to win. But and that's the conversation I had with Cody today. Like, these guys make it really easy to win, but it's definitely not. But there's some guys that I still don't have a great connection of name and face to, because they're relatively new and they haven't been to Victory Lane yet. And I don't, because of my commitment to the Learnerville TV and not getting to the track as early because of my job as I used to, I don't have a great connection with a lot of the names and faces. But, and again, once you have that connection and putting a name to the face and realizing that these aren't, you know, full-time drivers and, you know, racing on daddy's money. These are guys that work 40, 60 hours a week, put mm-hmm. second and third mortgages on their homes and, you know, postpone starting families and going on vacations to provide this entertainment, and finding out that these are school teachers and welders and police officers and, you know, and that just their hometowns. Like, you know, there are some guys from Freeport and Sarver that are fan favorites because that's where a lot of our fans are from. But, you know, if you're from Butler or if you're from Youngstown, Ohio, and, you know, Jack Sonoma Jr. lives in that, you know, same area, then maybe that's the thing that's your favorite driver. Or, you know, if they're a welder and your dad's a welder, those kind of things are what really make those connections. So being able to make the racing more personal through the Jumbotron is something we're really looking forward to this year, because we've done some things with, you know, meet and greet the drivers and, but it's really hard on Friday nights. People work, like I said, 40 hours a week. You know, a lot of our fans work 8-10 hours before they come to the track. So we don't like to take a whole lot of time, like a lot of the Saturday night tracks do, to do driver autograph sessions, because it slows down the program. And we've tried to do them before the race, but a lot of people don't get there until 6:30, 7 o'clock. So just really looking forward to using that Jumbotron, not only to show replays and different angles on Learnerville TV, but really to bring names to faces and, you know, make the racing more personal to our fans.
Yeah, definitely. Plus, our logo is going to look sweet on that big Jumbotron next
Absolutely,
time we do
yeah.
visit.
No doubt. But yeah, you talk about, you know, bringing kids to the track and cultivating that next generation of not only fans but drivers, because a lot of our drivers come from, you know, that passion comes from being a fan and being, you know, sitting in the stands at a young age. And, you know, AJ mm-hmm. talked about in Victory Lane, like, he grew up down in, you know, turn four when his dad was raced, and he was one of the kids under the bleachers with, you know, Matchbox cars. And now he's out there winning races. So, and I have four boys, and I can't take them anywhere for free, whether it's, you know, imagine going to a Steelers game or, you know, a Cleveland Guardians game or Cavaliers game, and I'll pay for myself, but since my kids are 10 and under, they get in free, right? You know, they'd look at you like you're crazy. And but, you know, it's been, you know, 10 and under has been free at Learnerville for, you know, as long as I can remember. And that means a lot to our families. And, you know, concession prices have gone up, and we did increase one of the offsets of the Jumbotron and, you know, increasing our purses by 17%, as we did for the first time in several years, increase the general admission from $15 to $18. And $3 doesn't sound like a lot, but there was a time in my life where I pretty much had $20 to get in the races, and if it cost $15 to get in, I had $5 to, you know, go to the concession stand or get a 50-50 ticket. And once my $20 was gone, I was done. And a lot of our fans are in that situation. They use the money they have to get in, and, you know, the one nice thing that we've still been able to do is you can bring in, you know, soft drinks and snacks. We have people that bring in the Chelly Pizza. You know, they'll stop down the road. They can't afford to feed a family out of the concession stand, and we understand that. So we do allow people to bring in their own food. And I've seen people bring in, you know, bags of sheets and the Chelly's Pizza. And, you know, some people can go and drop $50, $100 on concessions and beer and not even bat an eye. For other people, they could do it even if they wanted to. So it's a little bit of everything at the action track, not only the drivers, but the fans as well. And I still think we provide the best quality of entertainment of, you know, anything out there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely a track that if somebody's not been to, they need to get to soon. We are talking with Eric Westendorf of Lernerville Speedway on the Barbasol Shave phone lines. And, Eric, again, I thank you for coming on tonight and talking to us. Let's talk real quick because we're running short on time, but I want to talk about the schedule for you guys. Now, the next few weeks, is basic Fab Four racing for you guys. You've got a few different things with the Rush late models, the ULMS McConnell Memorial coming up, but a couple big dates I have circled that I kind of want to talk about. The first one is this $1,000 to win pro stock on May 26th, and then on June 9th, something for the fans to look forward to is fireworks that night. It's the number one Cochran night. So we'll talk about those two nights real quick. First, 1,000 to win. Some people might say, whatever, but that sounds like a decent purse for the pro stocks.
Yeah, so Sean Hooks and Greg Wheeling has been involved in the Penn Ohio pro stock. So there's, you know, obviously the Outlaws and the All-Stars for the sprints. There's Lucas Oil and the Outlaws for the late models, and then the modified, you have the Super Dirt Car Series and the Regional Series, which is BRP Modified Tour for those three divisions. But for a long time, there wasn't that bigger sanctioning body or that bigger regional organization for pro stock. So a couple of different things that Penn Ohio has done. One, it's kind of created a unified set of rules for the pro stocks in our area. What had happened for a long time prior to Penn Ohio is our rules were different than Pittsburgh's rules and different from Sharon and Tri-City and Mercer. So you had a lot of guys that probably would have run, you know, two nights a week or maybe even three nights a week, but they had to spend so much extra money on different tire rules or different, you know, engine rules and weight rules that it just made it hard for a Lernerville guy to go to Pittsburgh or to Sharon on a Saturday night if we rained out and the weather was nice, where, you know, Penn Ohio has kind of unified all of those rules packages at all the other tracks. And in addition to that, they have an additional point fund, and they've increased the purses around. And it's really, you know, breathed life in that division where guys can still build their own engines. And, you know, the SS chassis that Chris Schneider builds and the Dietz Fabrication chassis that Tyler builds, and there's some others around as well. But it's kind of gone away from, you know, going to a junkyard and building your own car, where you do now have to, for the most part, you have to have one of those fabricated chassis to be competitive in that division. But you can still do your own engine work if you want to. We do have a lot of guys. You know, Mike Ingram is the, you know, pretty much the top engine builder for pro stocks. In addition, he's also a Rush builder, but he's in Katanning, you know, right above the track. And so to be in that upper echelon, you probably do need one of those chassis and one of Mike's or a comparable engines, but you can still be competitive by building your own engines in that division, which really isn't the case in the top three divisions. So, you know, the Fab Four Racing is the heart and soul of what we do. And our new general manager, Jason Shank, it was really important to him. And we really sat down in the off season and tried to have as many Fab Four races on the schedule as possible. And if on a given night, you know, when the Outlaws come to Sharon or, you know, we like to give the drivers after the Silver Cup the Friday night off. Instead of taking all the divisions off the card, we were really intentional this year of if we had to give a division a night off, just fill that division with, like you said, with the Rush late models, if the super late models were somewhere else, or if it's a, you know, the sprint cars are off, and, you know, we'll put the Rush sprints or the Allegheny Sprint Tour 305s on the card that have the other three divisions. So it's kind of a, like a hybrid Fab Four racing, but it's still a Fab Four Friday where we're not taking 3, 4, 5 Friday nights in June and July away from our, you know, loyal drivers. So that was very intentional in building the schedule this year. But yeah, having extra money in the purse, whether it's through the ULMS for the late models, the BRP for the modifieds. Tyler Buechner, our former scorer, has done a great job with Western PA Sprint Speed Week, building that back up over the last few years. Palooza Roofing, one of our sponsors, does the Sprint Spectacular every year. So anytime you can throw extra money into the purse for our regular division, it brings increased drivers in. But it also, you know, puts more money in the pocket of our drivers, and they greatly appreciate that. So for Penn, Ohio to come in and do a 1,000-to-win race, I believe I just saw on social media Chase Lambert, one of our drivers, and again, he's another generational driver, putting together a memorial race for his grandfather. And I think that race is going to be 2,000 to win. So anytime we can add purse to our local drivers without having a sanctioning body come in, it just makes it more likely that our guys win that money. And that goes a long way and really means a lot to those drivers and to our fans.
Yeah. And then in June, there's quite a bit going on in June, actually.
Yeah, a little bit.
Lernerville. on June 9th and 10th, it's kind of a back-to-back deal there at the racetrack. On the 9th, on Friday night, you have the fireworks. And then on the 10th, Saturday night, is the summer vacation bus and kids bike races and enduro.
Yeah, so those two events are always races that bring a lot of non-regular fans. So a lot of fans are there every Friday night. But those two races, the fireworks and the school bus and kids bike races, bring in a lot of non-regular community members. Some people only come, they come to Lernerville once a year and it's for fireworks night. And then we have others who, you know, come twice a year and it's just for the kids bike and school bus races. But, you know, we really try on those nights. And again, we're very intentional about some of the activities and events that we do on those nights that, if they're there for the first time, or if they're only there once a year, we really want to make it an inviting environment and do a lot of fan engagement. And we probably do more giveaways on those nights, whether it's hats, T-shirts, decals, stuff like that, because we really want to entice those people to come back and be those regular fans. We don't want them – I mean, we appreciate that they come once or twice a year. We'd much rather they come once or twice a month or, you know, every Friday night. So – we realize too that it's not for everybody. Racing is a niche sport. Like I love sports. I'm not a huge soccer fan, but I appreciate it and I understand it. But I don't go out of my way to watch it. And a lot of people are like that with racing. You either love it or you hate it. And there's not a lot of, you know, casual fans. But when we do get those casual fans, we try to wrap our arms around them and try to convince them to come back on a more regular basis.
Yeah, and not to take away from any of the divisions that run at Lernerville on a weekly basis or any of those drivers, but I'd have to say that probably one of the biggest races that Lernerville has every year is the Firecracker, and it's a three-night event. It is sanctioned by Lucas Oil Late Model Dirt Series now, and that is June 22nd through the 24th, again, Thursday through Saturday. And this is presented by Big River Steel, which I believe Big River Steel came on a couple years ago to help promote this race. Not that it needed help being promoted, but the Firecracker 100 is definitely one of the marquee races. You know, we talk about NASCAR and them having crown jewel races throughout the season, you know, the Daytona 500, Darlington. But I would say Firecracker 100 would be one of the marquee or crown jewel races that Lernerville has and is promoted by Lucas Oil and Big River Steel.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was a big shift last year, to be honest. And it was a calculated risk. We knew. So there was a big push from the fans, had been clamoring for a long time to turn that race to a Lucas race instead of a World of Outlaws race. And we had a great relationship with the World of Outlaws. It was a great event for 15 years. I helped build it. The first year I was there was 2007, and that was the first running of the Firecracker. And we met, and again, the track was owned at that point by World Racing Group, but there were probably 10 of us between the World Racing Group, the Outlaws, and Lernerville Speedway. We met for 2 or 3 hours every week on a conference call from that was probably right after Dirt Car Nationals at Volusia. So we're talking mid-February. We met for 2 or 3 hours almost every week, or I should say almost 2 or 3 hours. We did meet every week. Sometimes it was only an hour, but a lot of times it was 2 or 3 hours every Tuesday for building up to that event, because we built it from the ground up. And everything from the cornhole, and it actually didn't even start cornhole. It started as a horseshoe tournament, driver autograph session. All that stuff was very intentional to make it not just a big race but a big event, and made sure that the fans had that engagement with the drivers that you can't get at a NASCAR race. I mean, you can't throw horseshoes, or, you know, it kind of evolved over the years to cornhole and a kickball tournament. We had a Miss Firecracker pageant for a long time. We have post-race concerts on a stage in the parking lot on Thursday and Friday nights. We have a, you know, best camping site, best tailgate contest, and just really making it an event, not just a race. And just really proud of what that event has become. And fortunately or unfortunately, depending on your matter perspective, it was just time to go in a different direction with that event. And we took the risk last year and worked with Lucas Oil for that to be a Lucas Oil sponsored race or sanctioned race. And they brought Big River Steel on board and increased the purse from $30,000 to win to $50,000 to win. And, you know, you don't have to be a math major to realize that's almost, you know, a 100% increase. You're almost doubling the winner's share. And that's a big risk, because that extra $20,000 is a lot of times a break-even point for that. And but to have a sponsor like Big River Steel come on board and support that, and they weren't only the presenting sponsor, they had hundreds of employees there. I mean, it was like a showcase event for them. And it was just a great opportunity. Just looking forward to it, doing that again this year. It's been a great race and an event for a long time, but to have a great presenting sponsor like that, that brings hundreds of additional fans and employees and their families to the track is what you look for, you know, just in terms of building those events and, you know, taking something that's already great and just making it even better.
And originally, wasn't it just a 2-night event? It just recently went to 3 nights, or am I wrong?
Not recently. It's probably been more than a decade, but yes, originally the first 2, 3, even 4 years, it was a 2-night event, and that is still my all-time favorite format. The original format was qualifying, and I think they were either 12 or 15 lap heat races on Friday night, and then on Saturday we did the, you know, D, C, B main, whatever was required, and the 100 lap feature, because it was just the World of Outlaws late models at that point. And those heat races were the best. And I'm watching High Limit on Flow right now as I'm talking to you. I've always been a huge fan. Just grabbed my attention when I was 4 years old and hasn't let go of it yet. But those heat races for those first couple firecrackers were the best racing I've ever seen in my entire life. And because you had one opportunity to get in that race. I mean, you could run through the B main and, you know, get into that race, but you really had that Friday night heat race was your only opportunity to get a good starting position in that race. And just some of the memories from those heat races are just absolutely fantastic. And how it became a 3-night race. We ran the Friday night portion 1 year, and both Saturday and Sunday rained out. So we moved the firecracker finale to Labor Day weekend, where we had a, it was called the Working Man 50. So it was a 50 lap 1 day World of Outlaws show that was on Saturday, Memorial Day weekend. We piggybacked that and we rescheduled the finale of the firecracker on that Friday night. So that became a 2-day show. And then based on the success of that, they said, well, let's try a different format and run 2 full, you know, make it a 3-day race instead of 2, because people are camping anyway. So, you know, they just come a day earlier. They come on Wednesday or Thursday, and we'll do 2 full programs on Thursday and Friday night, and we'll use your best finish from those features to set the heat race lineups on Saturday night. And we changed the format last year a little bit as well, and I think even a year or two before that with the late models. I don't want to say it became stale, but it was just, you know, again, time to mix it up and do things a little bit different. Because, you know, when the format was your best finish from Thursday or Friday, we would have some guys that did really well on Thursday, and the racing wasn't quite as good on Friday because you had 5 or 10 guys locked into pretty good starting positions for Saturday, so they weren't going to risk it on Friday to potentially, you know, ruin their chances on Saturday. So it was just time to, you know, switch up the format a little bit. So the format's a little bit different now than it was then, but just a great event, great fan experience. The fan-driver interactions has always been a big part of that event.
Yeah. And looking at the rest of the schedule, we've only got about 10 more minutes, and I want to make sure we touch on these last two because, you know, we talk about the marquee races and not to take anything away from the Allegheny Sprints or, you know, the Penn Ohio series or the Rush series cars. But if you guys had a World of Outlaw race on your schedule this year, you would have hit what is known as a cycle in baseball.
Because right. You
would have had the Lucas Oil, you'd have had you've got the All-Star Circuit of Champions coming on July 18th, which is a Tuesday, for Don Martin Memorial Silver Cup, which is in its 32nd race, 32 races for that, which is a long time running for that race. And then later in September, you have the new High Limit Sprint Car Series coming with their 50,000 to win race for the Commonwealth Clash. So you guys are that close to hitting a cycle with getting, you know, and like I said, not taking anything away from any of the other series that races at Lernerville, but when you're talking about nationwide series that tour over the entire country and just go over many states, you know, Lucas Oil, the All-Stars, the High Limit Series now, and the All-Star Circuit Champ. I mean, the World of Outlaws is right there, but, you know, not to dwell on that, and not to take anything away from, the Don Martin Memorial on July 18th. And then, like I said, the High Limits race on September 26th. Those are some dates that people need to circle between June, July, and September. They've got many opportunities to come out to Lernerville and see some great racing this year.
Yeah, they really do. And the Don Martin has been my favorite night of the summer since that first race. And I think it was 1992. I remember going as a fan. I haven't missed, I've been at all of those Don Martin Memorial Silver Cups. Like I said, a lot of them as a fan, a few of them as a, not a crew chief, but a crew member on, you know, Chad Hill's car. And then, you know, now for the past 17 years as a track employee, and it never gets old. You know, when I talked earlier about the firecracker and it being a calculated risk going to Lucas Oil, we knew that there was a good chance that if we, you know, from their perspective, took that firecracker away from the World of Outlaws late model series, that they may take the Silver Cup away from us on the sprint car side. Unfortunately, that is, you know, what came to pass. And, you know, all those things are a business decision. And unfortunately, you know, we weren't on the Outlaw schedule last year for the first time since the Outlaws came into existence. And, you know, the Outlaws have always been at Lernerville, and, you know, hope someday to, you know, foster better relationships so that we can be on the Outlaw schedule again at some point. But for now, you know, greatly appreciate, you know, Tony Stewart and Jared Crude, from the All-Stars, jumping on board. You know, they couldn't sanction that event soon enough. You know, as soon as that Outlaw schedule came out last year and we weren't on it, it was minutes, if not seconds, before, you know, we were on the phone with them, trying, you know, working out the details of, you know, them sanctioning the Silver Cup. And because of how late in the game that decision came out, we had to get away from our, you know, traditional third day in July, and, you know, we had to do the best we could to take a date that was available. So we ran that in early July, and that really logistically put a damper on our schedule last year. You know, Knoxville and Williams Grove and Port Royal, there are some tracks that can pull off, you know, multiple big shows back to back like that, and you know, in close proximity. But as I said earlier, you know, the family that owns the track own and operate multiple scrap yards, and all but I think there might be 4 or 5 full-time employees. The rest of us, it's a part-time, you know, side hustle. It's a passion that we all have that, that, you know, we're not full-time employees. So for us to pull off 2 huge events like that in 10 days really put a strain on our resources and our mental and physical health. It was a lot. So, and, you know, we, that night before Ross Paulson and Blake Anderson left, we sat down and, you know, just short of begged and pleaded that, you know, we want to continue to sanction this with the All-Stars. Would really love to get back to this third Tuesday in July time frame. And they worked with us and kind of built their schedule around that and moved some things around. So Tony and Jared and Ross and Blake and Huff were working with us and stepping up in our time of need. And then, you know, once Kyle and Brad announced the High Limit Series, again, we were burning the phone lines down. You know, just we were probably one of the first calls that Brad got after that was announced was from Lernerville. Just wanted, you know, to have the opportunity to discuss getting on their schedule, much less to have one of their, you know, marquee events at 50,000 to win. I mean, that race has been 10,000 to win for a long time, standalone Saturday show. And sometimes it has not been a financial windfall for us. It's a lot of times that race was a break-even event, even with the World of Outlaws, which, you know, for the cost of the ticket to get in, seems like how can't you make a lot of money on that event? But the, you know, the purse and being a Saturday show, and, you know, we're Western PA like you guys in Ohio. Once you get into September, that's football season. So, you know, just little things you wouldn't think of as a track promoter. You know, depending on who Pitt or Penn State played that Saturday and what the weather was like, there were some Commonwealth clashes where it wasn't a great crowd, and we probably lost some money on those events. But it was some of the best racing we've ever had, too. I mean, you know, between Brad Sweet and David Gravel and, you know, more recently Kyle Larson, they put on some fantastic races in that Commonwealth Clash in September. And last year, Aaron Fry from the Fast Series out there in Ohio stepped up and sanctioned that event. And, you know, we kept it at 10,000 to win, which was their biggest purse of the season. And we got great driver support from that race. But when we had the opportunity to work with High Limit Series, and I really, you know, we were already committed to running that race with the All-Stars. I think Brad and Kyle would have loved for that race to have been the Don Martin Memorial. But, you know, we came to the table, and now it's the Commonwealth Clash with a High Limit, and 50,000 to win, you know, a bigger payday than the Don Martin Memorial Silver Cup has ever been. So it is a little weird to look at the schedule and for the Don Martin Memorial to be the third biggest purse on our schedule. But, you know, thanks to the High Limit Series and thanks to Lucas Oil and Big River Steel, you know, that's kind of where we are. But, you know, to have 3 huge events like that, and then the one thing we haven't talked about yet is the Steel City Stampede that we've closed our season with now for 15 years, where we have 10 divisions and 250, 300 cars. It's a great schedule, and, you know, the backbone is the Fab Four Racing. So just getting started. My wife is not a race fan at all, so she puts up a lot with me, you know, into racing. And, oh, wow, there's a big flip in the High Limit Series. Wow. That's Ian Matson. Jeez, that was bad. Yeah, it's pretty wild. Sorry, get distracted. But, yeah, it's just it's a great schedule, and it's a long season. It's a grind, and but it's something I still really love doing. And, you know, with the Jumbotron, Lernerville TV, just really looking forward to a great 2023 season.
Yeah, I wish we had more time to talk about the 15th annual Steel City Stampede, another 3-day event at Lernerville Speedway. But Eric, again, we were joined tonight by Eric Wessendorf of Lernerville Speedway. Eric, always great to have you on. I'm glad that you were able to come on tonight and talk to us. And I appreciate you guys being a friend and supporter of the show as well.
And I always appreciate the opportunity. And, you know, like I said, just being close enough that your fans can come to us on a given weekend or for one of these events. But, you know, outside of our, you know, regular fan base, it's always a great opportunity. And probably should have coordinated this sooner. But, again, if you want to do something where, you know, we can give away a four-pack of Fab Four tickets, if you get a name of a winner, however we want to give that away, and, you know, we'll touch base and, you know, bring four of your fans out. Like I said, a four-pack of tickets. So one lucky winner and three fans, and they can come join us for any Fab Four Friday. And then maybe before the high limit race, come back on, even if it's just for a smaller segment, and talk about our season, kind of do a season recap, and then maybe a preview of the high limit race and the Still City Stampede. I'd be down for that for sometime in August or September.
Oh yeah, we'll definitely have you on, and we'll see about me trying to get back out to Lernerville for a Friday night show, or you know, maybe one of the other special event shows that I can make it out to. But always love coming out to Lernerville, and we'll definitely coordinate a giveaway with you on that, because we're I'm trying to have more giveaways throughout the year. I'm getting more merchandise for myself for the show, and other sponsors are chipping in some other stuff as well. So I'll definitely talk to you about that and setting something up for that. But Eric, have a great rest of your evening. Again, thanks for taking time out of your Tuesday. I know you're busy, and you said you're getting ready to go away for business here for a few days. So I appreciate you taking the time and talking to us and giving us a rundown of the 2023 season at Lernerville. And I hope you guys have a great season, and we'll definitely have you on here in a couple months to see how it's been.
Sounds good, buddy. I appreciate it. Appreciate the opportunity. And I guess if I have to be nice, good luck to your Eagles on the draft Thursday night.
Yeah, good luck to the Steelers as well.
Sounds good, buddy. Right, always Eric. Good to talk to you.
Yes, sir.
Take
have
care.
A good rest of your night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, everybody. That was Eric Westendorf of Lernerville Speedway joining us tonight to give us a breakdown on the 2023 racing season at Lernerville. Some great dates that we talked about there. You guys need to circle on the calendar between May 26th, the 1,000 to win for the Pro Stocks, June 10th, which is that summer vacation enduro race. You got June 22nd through the 24th, the Firecracker 100. July 18th, the Don Martin Memorial Silver Cup, 32nd running of that race. September 26th, the high limit, 50,000 to win. You got the Steel City Stampede at the end of the season as well. So a bunch of dates to circle and chances to get to Lernerville. It's a great racetrack, beautiful facilities. Beautiful red clay track that just looks amazing under the light. So definitely need to take a chance and go to Lernerville Speedway this year and check out, even if it's just a Friday night Fab Four regular racing weekend, you got to check them out. Thanks again to Eric for coming on tonight. Appreciate it. We'll have him on again later in the year to get breakdown on how the season's been going. So thank you for tuning in tonight. We went a little over, but had a great conversation with Eric. Always enjoy talking to him. We'll be back next Tuesday. Next Tuesday, May 2nd, we will have Jason Bush, modified driver at Jennerstown Speedway. He will be with us. We'll talk to him about his upcoming season, see how he's doing, get a breakdown on last year, see how the car is for this year. I believe they just had a test and tune a weekend or two ago, so we'll see how the car is, see if it's set up and ready to go. And then May 16th, we will be coming to you live from Wayne County Speedway when the High Limits Racing Sprint Car Series comes to Wayne County Speedway for that race. That's a Tuesday night. We will be there as well. So be sure to tune in next Tuesday. Hopefully Christina's back with me next week. But thankfully, Eric called in a little bit early, so we were able to have a good conversation with him tonight. So be sure to tune in next Tuesday, 8 o'clock. We'll be right here again on the Slicks and Sticks Radio Network. Thank you to all our sponsors again, 357 Woodworks, Margazzano Designs, Barbasol Shave, Hardcore Fishing Game, and Racer Chasing Apparel, amongst all the other ones. And thank you
to you, the fans, for tuning in each week as well. Hope you enjoyed the show tonight. For Christina, for Eric, I'm your host, Pete. We'll talk to you next week. See ya.
In the fast lane, going too fast in the fast lane.